Tone Deaf is the journey of a musical theater nerd, bringing musicals into the life of their musically challenged spouse. The reactions to the musicals are real and mostly unedited. This show is rated explicit for mature content and strong language. Now sit back, relax, and have a laugh. You're listening to Tone Deaf.
Welcome to Tone Deaf, a theater nerd's guide for their musically challenged spouse. I'm Kay, a musical theater nerd.
I'm Warren, and I'm musically challenged, and we're now sponsored by the Barker and Lovett Bakery.
Wait, the Barker and Lovett Bakery? Babe?
Well, that's what I'm assuming with the box we got on our doorstep. I mean, it was unsolicited pies, which are the best pies, but they were addressed to Kay and Warren instead of Samuel and Rodriguez. So I think that we have a sponsor.
And they're paying us in pies.
Yeah. I think maybe they were, like, sad that the pies got burned up in our last episode and decided to do us a real solid. They even have a copy for us to read later, so I figure we can eat them in the intermission while we watch the next show for our spooky month.
I don't think we want to eat pies from this Baker and Lovett pie shop while we watch this show.
Pie shop, babe. It's not the Barker and Lovett pie shop.
Right. What kind of pies did they send us?
I was gonna wait until later when we read the copy.
Oh, yeah, sure, babe. We can wait until later to find out what's in the pies.
Look, I know Sweeney Todd has something to do with people pies and cannibalism, but this was the Lovett Pie Shop, and not Todd Pie Shop. It's perfectly fine. Besides, I realized you were using the pulled pork in the pies that we were joking about last episode, so I'm not worried about eating people. So, just tell me about Sweeney Todd.
Right. Okay, so, we're doing Stephen Sondheim's Sweeney Todd. The last time we visited with Sondheim was all the way back in West Side Story. And I almost went down a rabbit hole with this one, so I'm going to do kind of a condensed history of the character before we get into the actual musical, partly because we're a musical theater podcast, and partly because I feel like this is more Pomegranates and Pitchforks territory anyway.
So, oh, maybe we need to do like a tie-in episode with them.
That would be fucking sweet. So, Sweeney Todd was a serial killer character who first appeared in the Penny Dreadful, The String of Pearls, which was written by either Malcolm Reimer or Thomas Pickett Prest, or Edward P. Hingston, or George McFerrin.
So they don't know
or
who
Albert
wrote it?
Richard. Yeah, they don't know for sure because there's a lot of attributions for this because Penny Dreadfuls.
Okay.
Which, Penny Dreadfuls, because I know that'll be the next question.
God damn it, you know me so well.
Were these cheap stories that were published weekly.
Okay, so that's why they're Penny Dreadfuls, is because it was just a cheap story that you could get.
Yeah, and they're usually like crime stories or horror or
just whatever
like
was
that.
Popular and selling at the time.
Yeah. And String of Pearls ran from 1846 to 1847 in Edward Lloyd's The People's Periodical and Family Library. And Sweeney Todd, the demon barber of Fleet Street, was the story's antagonist. He was a barber serial killer who would have his partner in crime.
You're eyeing that box from our sponsor kind of weird, babe.
Yeah. So they would bake the victims into the pies, and there's some dispute regarding whether or not what the true origins were of this character and whether or not Sweeney Todd was an actual person, Warren.
Look at it. Hey, I may not know my genealogy, but I doubt I'm related to Sweeney Todd.
Yeah. There is a bit of a historical basis for this, though. Because there was an urban legend in Dickensian London regarding the dubiousness of meats used to fill pies.
I assume that's kind of where the term mystery meat came from.
Yeah, and they mostly would say, like, the pies were filled with dogs or rats or cats or people. And in the Dickens book, The Pickwick Papers, the character Sam Weller even states, "When you know the lady has made it, and it's quite sure it ain't kitten. which will be important later. So, yeah.
When you're sure the lady has made it, but you're not sure it's
Kitten? Well, you know it's not Kitten. So if a man makes the pie,
oh, gotcha.
Then it's Kitten. If it's a woman, then you know it's really...
Gotcha. I get it. I'm slow to the party.
You're fine. You're fine. So Sweeney Todd was a hit, and he even became the subject of a String of Pearls melodrama adaptation written by George Didbin Pitt, which is where the catchphrase of Sweeney Todd's, "I'll polish him off," became popular. And
"I'll polish him off"?
Yes.
It sounds like a masturbation joke. Like, I'll invite him over for a quick polish off, you know?
So what's interesting about this is the String of Pearls serial novel No.
Yes. Polishing off someone will create a string of pearls.
God.
I'm
sorry. Not tone deaf without a dick joke.
You can't serve it up to me on that beautiful pearling crusted platter and not expect me to polish off that joke for you. I have a certain amount of predictability that I am obligated to maintain. Listeners appreciate feeling safe and secure, knowing that they can expect certain things to happen. We will also be introducing a new Patreon level that's called Polisher.
No!
Which comes with unique bonuses only to that level. Kay will talk about it much later in the program.
No!
I'm sorry, dear.
Okay. So
I've derailed you too much.
I was gonna state that the S&P melodrama was actually written before the novel had finished, like the serialized novelization had finished.
Okay, so they basically pulled like an anime. They made an anime before the manga was done.
Yes.
And people were like, why is it not as good as the manga?
Well, and it was like a case of, we don't even know how this is ending, but we're doing it.
Oh, so it's now also Game of Thrones. Is
yeah, it was, Game of Thrones. It was more a Game of Thrones than an anime, but still there.
What other pop cultural references can we make during Dickensian England with people pies?
I'm sure we'll think of something. So, In true American fashion, so the story had first been published as a book in 1850 in London. Like after they had finished the serialized novel, they went, okay, let's put it out as a book. And so 1850 London, book comes out. 1852, the U.S. steals it.
That sounds yeah. Pretty U.S.
I mean, this is what happened to Pirates of Penzance yeah. and stuff, too.
Exactly. We'll bring it across the pond and make it our own and deny mm-hmm. that we did it.
Yeah, exactly. We like doing that in America. Don't trust America. So our serial barber, Sweeney Todd, ended up as the subject of melodramas and dramatic plays, and then he made his debut on the silver screen in 1926. Unfortunately, this was back when the silver screen meant silver nitrate, so that's one movie I'll never get to see. Sighs in El Apostol.
Did the premiere go up in smoke?
God damn it.
Was it a hot release?
Thank you for easing some of my pain with humor.
I thought about kept going, then I was like, no, I've derailed this too much.
So, at least the 1928 film exists. He was also played... I'm not shitting you with this one.
Oh, this will be good.
He was played by Todd Slaughter in 1936.
This is the part of the program where Warren stares at Kay blankly, and she has to suffer the realization he has no idea what she's talking about.
The name... Todd Slaughter played Sweeney Todd.
It's a pun on his name of Slaughter. Damn it. Here I'm like expecting you to name like a Brad Pitt type thing, like this popular person of the time did this. You should know this, Warren.
But no.
No, it's the basic level of love language that you and I have is just puns.
Yes.
And I fucking failed.
It's okay, babe. It's okay. Because you were expecting it to be, because you know I'm a silent movie buff, so it's like, oh, she's, ooh.
Yeah.
She's doing a silent movie, except for this wasn't in the silent era.
This well, is still black and white.
Yeah, it was pre-Technicolor era, but, you know.
Oh my god, that is the best way to say black and white, pre-Technicolor era.
Well, yeah, I mean, you had Kodachrome and a couple of other things coming out.
But I love that. I want to describe so many things as that now, like... But unfortunately, that wouldn't work with an animal unless they were truly black and white colorblind. You couldn't say a dog is.
No.
Their vision is pre-technicolored.
No, they're... I can't... No. We can't do this.
Back on track.
Back on track. So, after Todd Slaughter played him, he was the subject of a four-act melodrama in 1962. But things were about to change for old Sweeney, because the melodrama age was ending for a little bit. And people didn't want just black and white villains where they were just over-the-top evil. They wanted depth. They wanted heart. They wanted their villains morally gray.
I guess that's where we enter Sondheim?
Not yet, babe. But almost. Because in 1973, Christopher Bond released a different version of the story.
Bond. Christopher Bond.
Shit. So, in this version, he decided... He's not going to just be a serial killer. He's this guy who was wrongly sent to Australia for 15 years so that the judge that did this could rape his wife and steal their daughter.
Oh, fuck that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck him in every way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's one of those things where they went from, oh, he's cartoonishly evil to, no, I can see why you'd murder.
No, yeah, you put me in that situation, I'd be putting people in pies too.
Like, yeah, and he returns and finds out about this. He's naturally a bit upset.
Naturally.
And that's how you create a Sweeney Todd and his partner in crime. Sondheim sees this version, and there's a little twinkle in his eye as a musical version was conceived. Yes, babe, what's wrong?
Just people who create musicals, they have a switch in their brain that I don't think the rest of us do, where they just see a scenario before them and they think to themselves, this would be fucking great with music attached. Like,
I cannot wait to do Sunday in the Park with George. Because that's also Sondheim.
Oh, God.
Sondheim. So, to get off track a little bit with Sondheim, he has the same sort of thing as Weber, where it's like, I'm going to make a musical about this. The difference is that Sondheim's good. And is kind of a musical genius, and we'll get into it with this show.
So, I was going to say, so Sondheim has some shame, and mm-hmm. there's lines that he won't go to.
Yeah, and his stuff is definitely more artistic. And we'll talk about it in a bit with Sweeney Todd, but that's, you know, his... And his stuff generally is more dark. He's the same person who created Into the Woods. And then when we do Sunday in the Park with George, which is about the George Seurat painting.
Seurat,
God damn it. Seurat. No, I just got that out of my head.
A musical for thee.
God
for
damn thee. It. No, Warren. So it's like, it's not necessarily just the painting, but we'll get into that show later. But when you're saying, oh, looking at a scenario and making a musical about it, Sondheim kind of does that too. Another show of his, well, there are a few shows of his that'll be very interesting for you.
You know, if I was more musically talented, I could see making spoof musicals. Mm-hmm. And it's like just... For comedy reasons.
Yeah.
But I, as you know, am tone deaf and can't
I
do
mean,
much
we'll,
of that.
We'll do Hot and Bothered later, so.
We should crowdfund that.
Yeah, we should. So, with this show, he has sort of the same thing. And the reason for, and this is again where, in my opinion, Sondheim's better than Weber. There I said it. Sondheim was struck by the weight of the show and how these different ideas were brought into this show that was once reserved for melodramas, or into this character once reserved for melodramas, and it basically changed everything about the story. So instead of it just being, oh, I'm a bad guy,
I'm the bad guy.
It was like, hey, this bastard sent me to Australia, then raped my wife, took my kid, and, you know, fucking ruined everything.
It, you know what, this, oh my god, there's a decent parallel between Sweeney Todd and what's-his-face from, shit. Count of Monte Cristo.
Actually, that was one of the big inspirations for the play version of Sweeney Todd. So
okay.
I'm glad that you caught that.
Well, you know me. I love me some Count of Monte Cristo.
Yeah.
It was the movie remake. I've never read the book because I've heard that I wouldn't probably like it as much.
But, you know, it's that sort of feeling that you get with it.
Where
you're
absolutely rooting for the hero because you're like, yeah, your life got screwed over so bad. Go get him. Go get him, Tiger.
It's just that Sweeney Todd kind of will get on a tangent.
Revenge comes second. First, pies.
Well.
I'm fucking starving.
You'll see. So, Sondheim felt like the addition of music would actually add more. And I'm going to quote what he said about it. What I did to Chris's play is more than enhance it. I had a feeling that it would be a new animal. The effect it had at Stratford East in London and the effect it had at the Eurus Theatre in New York are two entirely different effects, even though it's the same play. It was essentially charming over there because they don't take Sweeney Todd seriously. Our production was larger in scope. Hal Prince, rest in peace, gave it an epic sense, a sense that this was a man of some size instead of just a nutcase. The music helps to give it that dimension. And actually, the music is the most important part of this show.
Well, it's a musical.
Well, in a different way.
Okay.
Because 80% of this show is music.
Now, when you say 80% of it is music, is it just music the whole time, or is it like 80% of sung through?
Music the whole time.
Okay.
There is sung music, but there's also music underscoring the dialogue, which doesn't happen in a lot of shows, as you've seen.
Yeah, as you were saying that, at first my brain was like, okay, why is that so important? And then I started thinking, have I seen that in others? No, I guess I haven't.
Yeah, it's not a common thing to do in shows, and generally, if they do that in a musical, it'll be one that's mostly sung through. And in this case, there is dialogue, but most of it is sung. And I want to say there's only, well, I'll probably get to it later in my notes. This show is his most complex score. And I actually think it's his best.
Okay.
I haven't seen all of his shows, granted, but the music in this just... Mwah.
Out of the ones you've seen, you think mm-hmm. it's best.
Out of the ones I've seen or listened to. Like, with this one, I haven't seen the whole show. I've seen scenes, and then I've listened to the whole show, and there's actually a really good cast. I believe it's the original Broadway cast on Spotify, and it is pretty much the entire show. And I've listened to it, and I'm just like, yes, yes.
Nice.
I love this.
I wonder if that's because they have more music in it, so they have more of the in-between parts before they're singing?
Yeah. The only show that I've seen that's not a sung-through or a mostly music-driven show that does the same thing where it's like pretty much the entire show is in one or two discs is Damn Yankees.
Okay.
And that would be the 1996 revival cast. So it's not common to get that, which I really like with Sweeney Todd. That's a cast recording that I will just crow about forever. And we'll get into it, but I have not seen the Johnny Depp movie, and we'll talk about it.
Yeah. I've seen a tiny, tiny bit of that. I don't remember where I was, but it was like on... and I'd seen part of it, and then I had to go away. So it's like, I couldn't even tell you what part it was that I had seen in it.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in a sec with regards to the cultural references with this show, but I'll talk about it right now. There's a scene in the movie Jersey Girl that was my introduction to Sweeney Todd when I was young and my mom was getting me into Kevin Smith films, because, I mean, my mom let me watch Dogma when it first came out, so.
Speaking of mwah.
Yes. But there is Jersey Girl Kevin Smith?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
I'm pretty sure. It's one I haven't seen, but I'm pretty sure.
But there's a scene where the lead's daughter is in Sweeney Todd.
Nice.
They sing the song God It's Good, which is the opener for the second act, and I was just like, I think I like this show, and is something wrong with me? So it's a really good show, and we'll be seeing it soon. So there's actually a pair of songs that are going to end the first act that are so dissonant from each other, because the first song is Holy Crap Heavy. And then the second song is my favorite song in the whole show because I legit laugh at the puns.
Nice. That's yes. Awesome.
And this expanded a part of the original play, actually, that was just a bit of dialogue going, I'm Sweeney Todd and I've finally snapped and want to kill people. And then his business partner being, sweet, I'll bake your victims into pies and sell them because meat is expensive, yo. So,
you know, and then of course, my brain doesn't go, oh my god, that's horrible. My brain goes into, well, did they know about stuff like Kuru, and were they smart to not use any of the brain and spinal fluid? Because otherwise, you know, you could eat people, be okay. You wouldn't have any, you know, negative repercussions.
I mean, they're not eating the pies, so.
Yeah.
They're selling the pies. So...
I just love that. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I never ate anybody. I just sold the people food to the people to eat it.
People pies. So, Hal Prince, who passed away recently, was brought on to direct and ended up taking it from, oh, this is a cute little horror musical, to, no, this is a gigantic metaphor for the Industrial Revolution. He didn't even want to direct it at first because Sweeney Todd, and, you know, just like, oh, this is a melodrama, this is gonna be dumb as shit. And then he came up with this metaphor and made the set into this giant steel horror show that critic Jack Kroll had said were part cathedral, part factory, part prison, that dwarfed and degraded the swarming denizens of the lower orders. And he goes on to say, Sondheim didn't have the same conception, but he went with it. And this is the take that Sondheim had on Prince's direction. Hal's metaphor is that the factory turns out Sweeney Todd's. It turns out soulless, defeated, hopeless people. That's what the play's about to him. Sweeney Todd is a product of that age. I think it's not. Sweeney Todd is a man bent on personal revenge, the way we all are in one way or another, and it has nothing whatsoever to do with the time he lived in, as far as I'm concerned. Sondheim had to convince Angela Lansbury to take her role in the show.
Babe, you're staring at the pies again, and I'm starting to have this feeling that I'm going to need to do some soul-searching about whether or not I want free pies.
Yeah, so... Lansbury was like this huge star in the 70s when Sondheim was creating this show, and she was saying, it's called Sweeney Todd, and I'm the second banana. And then then Sondheim auditioned my favorite patter song of his, A Little Priest, and said, I want her to have a music hall character. And Angela Lansbury was like, shit, that's how I came up in theater. Fuck yeah, I'm doing this. Well, okay. She didn't actually say that. She said, not just music hall, but Dottie Music Hall. But I like to think of Angela Lansbury saying fuck, so...
No, I mean, and this is a historically accurate podcast, so that we have rewritten history. That
yes,
is what it is.
That is,
now.
What it says. That yeah. is what Angela Lansbury said. Angela Lansbury said fuck.
If she would like to come on our show and say that she didn't say that, she's welcome to. Open door. Absolutely.
Or if she
Angela.
Wants to come on our show just to say fuck.
That we are
we
platform.
Are open to
we
that.
Are a platform for great celebrities to say fuck.
Absolutely.
And us.
And us. Especially us. So he then gets Len Carew on as Sweeney. And Hal was busy with his, you know, giant steel murder set. So Len and Angela basically created the characters themselves. And Len said of Angela, that cuckoo style of playing Mrs. Lovett, that was pretty much Angela. She invented that character.
Love it.
And Angela said, I just figured, hell, I've done everything else on Broadway. I might as well go with Mrs. Lovett.
Oh.
And then, on opening night, on March 1st, 1979, this critic, Harold Klerman, went to the former general manager of the Met, Schuyler, whatever his name is, Chapin. I'm just going to call him Chapin.
And said, good choice.
Yeah, and said, why wasn't this here? And Chapin was quoted as saying, I would have put it on like a shot if I'd had the opportunity. There would have been screams and yells, but I would, because it's an opera. It's a modern American opera. So, the first production of June of 1980, with 557 performances.
Pretty good.
This show won 8 musical.
Good for them.
Yeah, and it deserves it.
I'll be the judge of that.
Okay. The first national tour began in 1980 with Angela Lansbury and George Hearn, who had previously replaced Carew at the end of the Broadway run, A&E, in September of 1982. And this is the version we're seeing, and I'm so flippin' excited. And this version was also rebroadcast on PBS and Showtime.
Kay is so flippin' excited, she didn't say fuck.
I know. That's how you know. That's how you know I'm excited, because I said flip. That's like a big swear word.
Watch your flippin' language.
So, there was a North American tour in 1982 as well. So this is more than just the U.S. This is the U.S., Canada, and Mexico.
Mexico.
It premiered in London in July of 1982, mixed reviews. But it won an Olivier Award for Best Musical, so suck it, critics. And it only ran for 157 performances. It was revived twice on Broadway, once in 1989 and once in 2005, and four times in London, 93, 2004, 2012, and 2015. There was a movie in 2007. This show was also revived in L.A. in 1993 and off-Broadway in 2017.
What about the movie, Kay? What about the movie in 2007 with your favorite actor?
There's a movie in 2007 and Johnny Depp was in it, and I don't want to watch it right now, so we're watching Angela Lansbury. There have been productions in Australia, Manila, Barcelona, Mexico, Wales, South Africa, all over the place. This is a popular fucking show. And like I said, it's been referenced in a lot of stuff too. My most notable one that comes to mind is,
the Jersey Girl
scene. It's also pretty interesting musically. Sondheim himself calls it a black operetta. So like a dark operetta. He uses at least 20 leitmotifs in the show.
20 leitmotifs?
Mm-hmm. L-I-E-T motifs. A leitmotif is a short musical phrase that indicates a specific noun, like, you know, person, place, or thing. Like, in Steven Universe, each of the characters has their own leitmotif. Lions would be, let's see, da 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 da. So whenever there's something important with lion, that plays. Or Garnets would be the da 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 from okay. Stronger Than You.
Okay.
So.
My brain is having brain cells bump into each other, and I think they're having a conversation. I think I understand.
Is that neuron growing?
Maybe. I don't want to be overly optimistic.
So it's a maturing neuron. Sorry, I've been playing so much Ancestors right now. on my brain.
The neuron is polishing off and growing.
God damn it. So, in this show, Sondheim collaborated with Jonathan Tunick, and I would say, and so would a lot of other people, I'm pretty sure, that this show has, like, his best counterpoint. So where people are singing over each other, okay, or singing, gotcha. Like, back and forth and stuff like that, and it also has some of his best harmonies. He is heavy on angular harmonies in this, which is where harmonies are jumping between fourths and sixths and having an odd rhythm and being like Bach, who is one of Sondheim's biggest influences.
So in the attempt for my brain to grow a little bit here, would that be the kind of thing of like you have someone high, someone like, ah, oh, ah, oh.
Yeah, and like if you, so I'm trying to think of a piece of Bach's that you might...
If do it by name, like if I heard it, I would probably recognize it, but by name I won't. But that's okay. We will just move on.
But yeah, if you want to think angular harmonies or really think Sondheim, think Bach, which is why, again, Sondheim is my favorite out of the two big titans of musical theater.
Because harmonies is when they're supposed to be singing the same thing together. Yes. They're harmonizing, but
yeah.
Angular harmony, it just sounds like they're harmonizing it two very different...
Yes, there is. It's a little jarring to the ear, but it's not bad. Like, it's more of an unexpected thing. Let's see. Where am I in my notes?
Sorry.
No worries. So, like I said, Bach is a huge influence for Sondheim. He also was using the Dies Irae chant, which is what I was playing when you were playing Fallout the night that I was working on the script.
Okay.
When you were hearing the Dies Irae, Dies Irae. He uses that in the show, but not with the words Dies Irae. It's actually what he kind of uses for the... Attend the Tale of Sweeney Todd, which I just fucked up, but in his song, The Ballad of Sweeney Todd, which is sung throughout the show and has been stuck in my head alongside Que Sera Sera, so my life has been hell for the last 2 weeks because it's just been there in my brain. As I said earlier, the song is mostly sung, or the show is mostly sung through. Only 20% of it is dialogue. So it's not a sung through, but it's close.
It's knocking on the door.
Yeah.
It's sticking its foot in the doorway. It's like, hello,
mm-hmm.
Can I join you? And they're like, you can bring one leg in, but you leave the rest of your fucking body out the door.
Exactly. And it's... Wow. I say exactly like, yeah, this is a totally like, normal...
Totally normal analogy.
Yeah, for every human being, that's a total normal analogy.
Totally normal.
God damn.
You just know what to expect from me.
Yeah.
You're like, this is normal for you, but it's not normal for anybody else out there.
So, yeah, it's one of those things where this show, I like it because not only is it kind of different for musicals in general, but it's different for Sondheim. Because
experimentation is good. Like, artists need to try new things.
Yeah, Sondheim's not my favorite composer, but out of the great, like the ones that are that are described as the greats, he's my favorite. Because Andrew Lloyd Webber, as I've said before in the Discord channel, I feel like he's the McDonald's of musical theater. Sondheim's Popeye. Well, no, he's not Popeyes, because that's not a good analogy. He's the...
Well, Webber tries to have more mass appeal, where Sondheim tries to have more substance.
Yeah, yeah. Sondheim has a lot more substance to his stuff. So maybe Sondheim would be more the... I wouldn't put him as Ruth Chris Steakhouse.
I think we're hungry with these food references.
I do too. God damn. Yeah, let's not talk about that. Let's head into intermission then, and I guess you need to read this copy for our sponsors.
Yes. I mean, maybe. It's not related. It's Barker and Lovett Bakery and not just Lovett.
Hand over the copy, babe. Okay, Our sponsor for this week is Barker and Lovett Bakery. We are bringing the delicious taste of pies, pasties, and cakes that we have been famous for since 1846 to your door. Looking at this, it doesn't seem too worrisome. I don't know, maybe the owners are just capitalizing.
Craving a delicious shepherd's pie? We have you covered. We even have our very own king cake. With high-protein diets being all the rage, our products will certainly satisfy your appetite, as these are heavily fortified with more protein than the average baked good. Oh, so it's like when my mom would make those flax pancakes every now and then.
Flax pies. I'm not sure, babe.
Well, I'm not seeing anything too worrisome. We have the Beatles pasty. Ew, like bugs?
That's not spelled like the bug.
So, like, is it some sort of Beatles-themed pie?
You know, I haven't heard too much from Ringo as of late.
What?
Keep reading.
Let's see. The American pie? It's either a sexy pie or a deep-fried one.
Or it's a Buddy Holly pie.
What?
So, the song American Pie is possibly... You know what? Never mind. Keep reading.
Okay. There's a chess pie?
Is it American or Russian?
What?
Never mind. We'll get to that when we cover the play chess.
There's a Bobby and Andy pie. What's that?
I really hope they meant Bob Andy.
I'll just go down their list. Boysenberry pie, flapper pie, Jamaican patty, financier. Is that like a cake?
Maybe.
Oh, blondes and brownies.
Probably made from actual Girl Scouts.
Don't be mean, they're paying us.
Well, I'm just saying this is a little suspicious.
Well, then I won't tell you about their lady fingers.
Oh, come on, they're not even hiding it now.
On a customized... Ooh, customized pastry, here we go. Like, choose your own filling. That's, like, way expensive. And it's got all these instructions. You have to provide an address and a list of... Huh.
What?
We here at Tone Deaf regret to inform you that we are no longer accepting the sponsorship from Barker and Lovett Bakery. Let's go to intermission, okay?
Oh, God. Yeah, let's go to intermission.
Intermission, okay? Chop,
yep,
chop.
Yep, let's go. Hi folks, we wanted to take a quick moment to thank our Patreon sponsors.
Thank you to our stage crew sponsors, Jasmine Wu and Reagan, and our producer circle sponsor, Bianucci.
Thank you so much for your continued support of our show.
We truly appreciate it.
Now let's hear a word from one of our favorite shows, History on Blast.
Hello, and welcome to History on Blast. I'm Hillary, and I'll be your host as we call out history. Every other week, we'll be putting a different person, place, time, or event on blast for the shit that they pulled. This ain't your grandpa's history podcast, so if this sounds like your cup of harbor tea, be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast catcher.
And now, the lights are going down and the music is starting back up, so let's hop into the second act of the show. Well, if you can hear it over the mic, that episode really got Latte's appetite going.
Yeah, she's like, people pies, I sure could go for a cookie.
Yep, she's eating a cookie, so if you can hear it, that's what's going on.
Her chomping away in her crate 4 feet away.
How'd you like it?
It was a musical. That had some good songs in it. I don't think it's one that I will readily be excited to watch again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a rough show.
Because it's a bit rough in the feelsies.
Yep.
Area there.
Yep.
And I don't like it. I don't like how it ends. I don't like all the terrible stuff in it. It had some funny moments. Mm-hmm. It has some great music and all of that musical theater stuff, but
yeah.
But no.
Yeah.
Just a lot of no.
It's a different I hate how this ends than your usual I hate how this ends.
Touché. So, Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street, is not a fair title to give, because if you've been through what this guy has been through, you'd lose your shit too.
Yep.
Not to get too long into the title of this musical, but for real, seriously, you guys, what the fuck? Don't call a man a demon just because he slits people's throats and then has his partner bake them into pies. A better title would be Sweeney Todd, the barber who wanted revenge on the fuckface who stole his daughter and assaulted his wife. Fuck that guy. My alternate retitling of the show.
The whole thing?
The whole thing.
Okay, I like that.
The whole retitling.
I like that. I don't think I can do the whole thing into the episode description, but...
Well, just do is you take the first letter of each word. That's how you make the
I
title.
Could do that. Okay, that's our title.
It's gonna... Does someone just roll their face across the keyboard?
Just...
did Kay get sick of Warren's shit and just home row him? For those of you who don't know what home row is, it's when you smash a keyboard across someone's face.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
We're an informational podcast.
Yes, we are.
So, the show opens up with two men walking on stage and pulling down a mural of a beehive, I think. That's what it looked like to me. An ear-piercing shriek is sounded at the falling mural, and the screen fades to black. The darkness fades, and the stage is full with ragged English folk who proceed to sing about the ballad of our hero, the straight-laced, straight-razored, vigilante Razorsmith. I ruined it. Not Razorsmith. Scissorsmith. Speaking of our Scissorsmith, he pulls into the port on a young man's dinghy. Anthony, we learn his name is, and by clever and deductive reasoning, we learned that this corpsey-looking, clean-shaven fella is Sweeney Todd. A random, filthy hobo woman comes out of the shadows asking for alms from Anthony and a bit of the old split in the hedges, part in the bush, bury the spotted dick. How are you liking these dirty English sex puns?
Float in your dinghy.
Float in your dinghy. About as... I like them about as well as... I can't do this. This is too hard. Just kidding.
You okay?
Yeah.
I'm sorry that it... Yeah. This is a feelsy show. It's okay.
Sad.
Yeah.
I like a happy ending. This doesn't have a happy ending. It has an ending.
Yeah. Well, it is Spoopy Month, and the Spoopy musicals don't generally have happy endings.
How dare you bring logic into this? The filthy hobo woman also propositions Todd and is told off. She recognizes him, but I'm sure that tiny crab of a foreshadow will itch to us later. Will itch at us later. Sorry, get a little tongue-tied.
You're fine. Yeah, so there's a game that you can play with this. That's how quick can you catch on before Todd does?
I caught on pretty quick.
Same.
I caught on pretty quick.
Like, yeah, when I first listened to it, I was like, oh...
Yeah, with her whole, like,
where's this gonna go?
You look familiar, I know you. I was like, hey, this guy's been gone for 15 years. This person is crazy, but I bet there's more to this than just a throwaway line,
yeah.
Especially the fact that she's a reoccurring character throughout the entire show.
Yeah, so we won't say who this is yet,
not yet.
Just, we'll see when you guys, the wonderful audience, catches on.
Just know that there's some filthy hobo woman foreshadowing in this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, after turning away the filthy hobo woman who wants to have sex with both Todd and Anthony, Todd and Anthony move away from the filthy hobo woman, and Anthony tells Todd that if he needs his help, he would help him. Todd tells Anthony no, that Anthony is too innocent of a man, and Todd has seen the deep, dark pit full of shit and doesn't want Anthony to fall victim if he can help it. Todd!
There's a deep, dark world and a terrible pit.
It's full of shit.
Yeah, I can't sing that song fast enough, but yeah.
It's you are absolutely right about the music in the show, because like the music is really good, and they mm-hmm. have a song that is reprised multiple times. Mm-hmm. That's just the Ballad of Sweeney Todd, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's just the Demon Barber of Fleet Street.
Yeah, and the it's a terrible world in a deep dark pit, and it's filled with demons, and it's filled like, yeah, that part he sings that a lot in the show, and it. The more that he has his sanity slip, the worse it gets.
Yeah. At first it's, yeah. At first it's more of like, off the cuff, and he's just like, the world is a big pit full of shit, and there's vermin living in it. Mm-hmm. And then later on he's like, there's this deep dark pit, man, full of shit, and everyone's vermin.
Yeah, so. Oh, poor Sweeney.
Todd enters a local pie shop to grab a bite, and is treated to a woman's advertising pitch about how her pies are the worst in all of London. But at least she doesn't make her pies with cats, because cats are too quick for her to catch. That should be a t-shirt, Kay. Poppin' pussies and pies. Or it could be the name of a punk band.
Warren, I think that you've come up with our next shirt.
That could be the name of this episode, Poppin' Pussies and Pies.
That could be. We are explicit, so...
So Todd spits out the pie that he's eating at the behest of the pitiful pie maker, who tells him about how hard times are. Todd inquires why she doesn't rent out that vacant room above her shop. She proceeds to tell Todd that a terrible tale of Benjamin Barker, a man who was destroyed by a crooked judge who wanted to fuck Benjamin's wife and send Todd away on trumped-up charges. And that's... Yeah, Todd has had enough of Peggy the Pie Maker's story and erupts on her out of agony of hearing about his wife. Peggy is like, I knew it was you! I knew it's you, Benjamin Barker! That's when we're treated to what Sweeney Todd's real name was. He was beloved barber Benjamin Barker, who was a respected pillar of the community, had a wife, had a newborn child, mm-hmm. and it had it all taken away from him because some overly privileged fuck was like, that vagina. I want to be in that vagina. Oh, yeah. This man is with that vagina? Well, I don't want this man to be around anymore so that I can be with that vagina.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that vagina had a little vagina? I'm going to take that vagina home in a to-go bag. Like, is...
Oh, shit!
The judge in this is...
Yeah, he...
A horrible, horrible character, and I don't like him.
Yeah, you kind of just want to see him die right away.
Oh, my God.
Like, as soon as you know who he is, you're just like, that man. All the want
death,
him dead.
All the death upon that man. Todd inquires about the fate of his wife, Lucy.
Dead. Died from poisoning. Arsenic from the apothecary on the corner.
And his daughter, Joanna, who is the adoptive paternal, who's in the adoptive paternal clutches of Judge Turpin. Peggy Piemaker, who... I guess her name is actually...
Did they say Nellie Lovett.
Nellie Lovett. Mm-hmm. Yes, I love it. Lovett is like, hey, I saved your barber stuff. You can be a barber again. And Todd is like, oh, yeah. I'm going to take this sexy silver slicer dripping rubies all over the floor. Is rubies are an analogy for blood. And he's mm-hmm. going to take this ruby dripping razor and use it. On all of those who have wronged him. All mm-hmm. of those who have wronged him.
Yep.
The sweet crimson droplets of righteous justice for now. Todd's arm is complete. My notes are not doing this show justice because I'm a little fucked up from that show.
It's okay, babe.
I
understand.
Because like as I'm watching the show, my brain just goes into crazy alternate history mode. Where it's just like, oh my god, if I was in this situation, oh my god.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I empathize with Todd's character a little too much. Even because he gets fucking evil. He becomes evil later on.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, but I
Because I feel a little bad saying this after we had said all the stuff in the Death Note episode about how, you know, there's that point where light goes too far and you just can't care. But with Todd, he still has that, I miss my kid, my wife is dead, and this man wronged me, I'm gonna fucking snap. But you can see where his sanity snapped and why, whereas with Light, he was just sort of like, I want to be the god of a new world.
Todd's sanity snaps when he decides, you know what? I'm just gonna kill everyone.
Yeah.
That's when his sanity snaps. If it was like, oh, I'm gonna be the barber of the working class. I'm just gonna go after the rich and overprivileged who are using their power and authority to oppress the lower class. No, he's just like, you know what? Fuck this shit. I'm gonna kill everyone I possibly can.
Yeah, and I think that this does do a good job of... because I can see where he comes from, too, with it. That's the thing, is that they do such a good job of making it make sense as to why he would suddenly just go, fuck it. But we aren't to that point yet, but
I think one of the things, too... because we had kind of joked about how this is similar to the Count of Monte Cristo.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the book is different, and all I've seen is a movie version. But there was this tiny little part of my brain that was hoping against hope that the show would have a slightly happier ending.
Yeah.
And then we got to the ending.
Yeah.
And that hope died. And then it was resurrected as a skeleton because it's Spoopy Month. And then that skeleton proceeded to, I don't know, create an army of other skeletons because necromancy, because Spoopy Month.
Yeah.
And then it did the skeleton dance on my hopes and dreams.
I want to say that Sondheim shows you're not going to have that sort of coming away going, oh,
okay,
but you will.
Sorry, what are the other Sondheim shows we've seen?
We've only seen West Side Story.
Oh, that's right.
And okay. That was a collaboration with a bunch of other people. That was sort of his first.
Yeah, and West Side Story too. Fuck you, Sondheim. Okay. Okay. So Todd's BFF, Anthony the Sailor, follows his dinghy to a young woman singing about birds. I think. She definitely mentioned birds during the song, so I assume she's singing about birds. Joanna goes back into her home, and Anthony is brought face to face with the filthy hobo woman from the earlier scene, who, again, is like, give me money and I'll let you dock your ship in me harbor. You dip your log in me boggy swamp, and other sexual analogies. Anthony presses a hobo woman for information about Joanna and her house. Anthony decides to buy a songbird to woo Joanna, and we're treated to the horrific detail that the salesman blind the songbirds because, you know, they don't behave unless you do that. Fucking hell.
Yeah, so the treatment of animals, and especially birds, in early to mid-19th century was pretty horrific. You should hear what they did to crows, ravens, and parrots to get them to talk. So, it's horrific. It's horrific, and it was one of those things that, that scene, before that point, when Joanna's singing, she's singing to the birds and sort of talking about why do you sing even when you're in this cage, and you know, even my lark doesn't sing. And the way that she's singing kind of mimics a bird's song a little bit.
You had mentioned that because she had the vibrato and was really doing the high vibrato-y stuff.
Yeah, and so it mimicked the sound of a lark, and she's using a lot of analogies about being caged up, because that's what she is in Judge Turpin's house, and then there are these birds that will still just sing. And then you find out that they sing because they can't see, so they don't know if it's day or night anymore. And, yeah. And then it sort of gives you the whole, wow, everybody's just shitting on everyone in Dickensian London, huh? Everybody.
Dickensian be shitting, for sure.
Yeah, fuck these people.
Yeah. Anthony tries to give his, blind songbird to Joanna, but is rudely interrupted by creepy-ass Judge Turpin, who tells his bodyguard to get rid of Anthony. The bodyguard, let's call him Blobsworth for now.
Beetle Bamford.
it's Beetle. I just didn't know that yet. Puts Anthony's blinded bird out of its misery with a neck-snap finishing move, and threatens to do the same to Anthony. Anthony is successfully chased off, after a quick singing, after a quick song about stealing Joanna, and Judge Turpin gives us a really, really, really creepy rape vibe with his, stepdaughter. That sounds a lot nicer than kidnapped hostage, because that's in reality what she is.
Uh-huh.
And it is so creepy, because he comes home, he sees Anthony swooning over Joanna, and he's like, get out of here, get out of here. And then he goes up to Joanna, and he's like, you better not have been encouraging his attention. She's like, no, father, I only want to obey you. Mm-hmm. He's like, you're looking so pretty. And she, you could tell, like, her skin, she was like, oh, God, like, she picked up on his meaning right away. And I had this look on my face.
On our Twitter.
That Kay laughed and took a picture of, and I was petrified I was mortified.
Mm-hmm.
And I, Kay took advantage of me, folks, for cheap laughs.
It was an impressive frown face, and it was very similar to the frown face that I had when I first...
On a lighter note, snake oil salesman. Dirty, shitty little rat of a young man is selling piss in a bottle and claiming it will cure what ails ya. Of course, it doesn't do a taint's weight of good for anyone, for anything. Todd points this out, and the proprietor of the elixir is very upset someone would dare call his piss in a bottle a scam.
Mm-hmm.
Todd challenges the phony Italian barber to a shave-off, and, to no one's surprise, he wins, wagering a mere 5 pounds to his sexy-ass razor. The sleazy Italian barber packs up his mobile lie cart and buggers off the scene. It turns out that the man who murdered Anthony's bird was in the shave-off crowd, and his name is Beetle. Something like that. Beetle comes up to Todd and is like, hey, I know you. You look familiar. To which Todd is like, yeah, you know who I am, huh? Who am I? Someone you screwed over, maybe? Or can you not keep track of all the people whose lives you've destroyed, you twisted fuck? I mean, he's like, yeah, you don't know me. Beetle is like, okay, yeah, I guess I don't know you, but I'll be coming over to get a shave. To which Todd is like, I'll give you the closest shave you've ever had, motherfucker. I'll give you such a close shave. We then cut to Todd's new shop, A Little Off the Top is what I've named it, where our hero is visited, not by Beetle Bastard Face, but by Gucci Barber, who wants his 5 pounds back. Turns out he knows Todd is really Benjamin Barker. And one other thing, he's not Italian, he's Irish. He was a boy who Todd would hire to sweep up hair. The not-Italian-Irishman tries to blackmail Todd, but Todd don't play that game and decides to give him a Colombian necktie instead. Do you know what a Colombian necktie is?
Yes! Okay. Jesus Christ! And no, folks, that's not what he does.
Might as well. He's halfway there.
Well, he doesn't dispatch him with the razor yet. He just chokes him out and knocks him out for a bit and throws him into the trunk. And then...
I thought he did use the razor.
Not yet. Cause then,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Sorry. Me looking down, typing notes and stuff. I must have missed that. Because I saw the part where I thought he'd killed him and he just dumped him in the trunk.
Yeah.
But that's right. He opens up the trunk later and then slit.
Yep. Okay.
We find out in the next scene, not only is Turpin a corrupt judge, but he's also a creepy old fuck who plans to marry Joanna to keep the boys away from her.
Mm-hmm.
What? The fuck? Someone kill this guy stat.
I'm so glad that they cut out the song that usually goes there.
Oh, God, no. This is the one you were talking about that I would have...
Yeah, you would have been even worse off hearing that song.
Is it just him singing about how he can't wait to get inside that young woman?
It smacks of the song Hellfire from... Hunchback of Notre Dame,
where he's like, it's her fault that I want her
way, but like it doesn't quite go Judge Frollo, but it gets pretty close.
If I just hear Frollo and I'm like, Frollo, so. Well, I'm glad they left that song out.
Me too. And I think it was cut from a lot of productions. Like, it was originally in it, and then it was cut out, and then it's been added back in a few other productions, so...
Oh, well, joy.
You know, it's more of a, how much, can we make you hate this guy even more? How much can we make you hate this guy so that you root on Sweeney Todd for...
How much do you hate Judge Turpin? Can we make you hate him more? The answer might surprise you.
The answer is yes.
The judge is complaining to Beetle about how Joanna isn't excited to marry him. Bitches be crazy, am I right? Beetle is like, I know, I have an idea. You just need a shave. That will make the girl all excited for your geriatric genitalia.
She's 16. She's a baby.
And he's like, a jillion?
Yeah, she's a baby. She's an itty-bitty baby.
Beetle plugs Todd's shop to Judge Turpin, and the judge is like, okay. The judge then has Beetle lead him to Todd's shop to get a little off the top of his lifespan, that is. Beetle bounces off the stage at the behest of his master, and the judge meanders on up the stairs to Todd's shop, being so kind as to ring the bell. Otherwise, he might have overheard Todd talking about how much he wants to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Judge Turpin takes a seat in Todd's chair, and the two share a song about pretty women. And right before Todd is ready to slit his throat, Anthony rushes onto... Wow, I totally butchered that when I typed it. Anthony rushes in to not read the room, and instead divulges his plans to elope with Joanna on Sunday before she can be wed to Turpin, to which Turpin is like, oh, hell no. And he freaks out on Anthony because of Joanna and on Todd for knowing Anthony. Turpin rushes out of the room in a grumpy old man way, mumbling about how he's gonna lock Joanna away so no one can fuck her. And Todd, that's what he's basically saying. And Todd tells Anthony to get the fuck out. I said out! Because Anthony ruined his chance for revenge. And there's a part that I love this in the show. After Beetle leads Turpin to Todd's shop, and he's like, and Turpin's like, all right, I won't be needing you. He's like, very good, sir. And Beetle goes off, and Todd's just, and God, I'm getting everybody's names mixed up. Turpin is just like, okay, stairs, rings the bell. And when Todd is at the top and he like looks down and he's just like, oh my God. Like his voice changes. It's like a little boy with excitement. He's like, Santa came early and brought me everything I wanted.
He brought me a judge to murder.
He's like singing to Lovett. He's just like, the judge is right there. Like, I love the acting in that exchange in that part because he is just so excited that he's going to murder the judge already.
Yeah, no, his acting is fantastic. Oh,
everybody
in this.
Did a good job.
Yeah.
I mean, and the two main people, Todd and...
Lovett.
Yeah. Crap, remind me what her name is.
Angela Lansbury.
Thank you, Miss Lansbury, who I have seen... plenty of her work, and I can't seem to commit the image of her face in my brain and attach it with her fucking name. Because I'm broken like that. So, after the botched revenge attempt, Todd gets real emo and reprises a song from earlier about how the world is shit, and now he wants to kill everyone. This is when he starts, like, this part confused me initially when they were singing it, because I thought he was talking about just going after the privileged and the upper crust. But no, he is talking about, I'm just gonna kill everyone. Anyone who comes up, I'm just gonna kill them. Because fuck them. That's why. Like,
yeah.
Like, Todd, I want to be on your side, man. I want to be on your side, but if you're gonna have vigilante justice, you can't kill innocent people. You just can't.
Yeah.
It's a no.
Well, and then there's his reasoning of, like, there's two people in the world. There's the people who put their foot down on you, and then the people who have their feet put or have their faces smashed down. Well, and then
he said that there's the people who know their place, yeah, and the people who put their foot in your face.
Yeah, and then like...
And that's what made me think that he was going to go after just the people who are doing the foot putting.
No, because then he mentions he's going to put the people who were being put upon out of their misery as well.
Oh, gotcha.
So he's like, you know, everyone gets to die.
Everyone gets to die. The bullies and the bullied.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's where you lost me, Todd.
Yep.
Okay, after Todd's emo song, Todd and... I wrote it as Mr. Lovett. Miss Lovett. Then have a song to which Kay laughed her ass off.
Yep.
And I had a huge smile on my face the entire time. The song, of course, is about making people pies and all the people pie related puns that come along with such a song. The people pie song leads into intermission and made me oddly hungry. So, and you were so funny with that part, though, because the song it's a pretty good length of song.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't a whole lot to write about it. Really, you just enjoy the song because, oh my god, like, I wish I could do it justice. You could probably do it better than me, but they'd be like, what would it be like? How they're basically treating people's professions as if it were like a cut of meat or yes, a type of meat.
This one's a bit stringy. It's the fiddler. No, that's not the fiddler. That's a piccolo player. How can you tell? It's piping hot.
Yeah. Like, what was the one that they talked about? Like, try this. Oh, it's greasy. But they're talking about eating people and how apparently people's meat has a texture and consistency related to the profession that mm-hmm. they occupy.
I want the general, with or without his privates.
Yeah. So it's a pretty great song in, like, a super dark way. Which, of course, that's
Kay. The best kind of humor.
Well, that's Kay's humor, top to bottom.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons I love you.
I love you.
So that song leads us into intermission. We come back from intermission to see the success of Miss Lovett's meat pies. She's fancy. She has customers. She has achieved the London dream. And all it took was murder and cannibalism. Todd shows off his murder chair to Miss Lovett, who is like, it's gorgeous, while the dinner mob screams, more hot pies! More hot, juicy meat pies. Yeah, sweet and savory, hot meat pies. Pies so full of hot meat that they're bursting their buns to contain all that succulent, swollen sustenance.
What the fuck?
I wish everybody could see the look on your face right now. Hey, I'm trying to bring some joy to this dark-ass musical, and if I have to do it with sexual arousal, I will do it.
It's not tone-deaf without a dick joke, or two, or five.
Or 20, or however many I can cram into this tight space.
Mmm.
Oh. And Anthony is still here, if you were all wondering. He's just creeping outside of Joanna's house, singing about how much he loves her and how he's not going anywhere without her. Yeah, Anthony, because love at first sight is a real thing. Oh, and the song goes to Todd's shop, too, where he's indiscriminately killing all of his customers. I thought he had sung about just killing the rich and elite, but no, he snapped completely and is just killing everyone. Poor business plan there, Todd. Meanwhile, during this scene, filthy hobo woman is the only one who seems to know that something isn't right with the pie shop. Granted, she's insane and right for the wrong reasons, but she knows the scent of human flesh for some reason. She's just like, this is wrong. This is wrong. Everything's wrong.
Because of the devil. They're devils. She's a devil woman.
Exactly. Well, you're not wrong.
City on fire.
City on fire. Oh, hey. So Judge Turpin
mm-hmm.
put his underage child bride-to-be in an insane asylum. Because
mm-hmm.
any beautiful young woman who doesn't want to hop on his fossilized cockasaurus must have something wrong with them. I'll let you process fossilized cockasaurus.
Jesus Christ.
Anthony tries to get help for the wrongfully imprisoned girl, but who does his plea for help fall upon? Well, Beetle the bastardly fuckface, that's who. Beetle insists that Judge Turpin is a perfect, wonderful man, and that Joanna is deserving of being there, what with her obvious insanity and whatnot. Anthony is chased off by some of Beetle's goons and retreated to a song number by Mrs. Levitt. Miss Levitt. Love it.
Love it.
Love it.
Not Levitt. Love Levitt it. Was our former governor.
Love it.
Love it.
Love it. Sings to it. Todd.
Love it.
Love you.
I love you.
Love it. Sings to Todd about how she won't leave it. You know, things are pretty good. We have a legit honorable business on the up and up, and maybe they should settle down and be a couple. A couple of business partners who also are a couple. Miss Lovett wants to love Todd's it. But Todd is like, I'll never love again. I won't be happy until I get my revenge. And that scene did make me laugh because he's just sitting there kind of being curmudgeon. He's like, the judge hasn't come back to my shop since Anthony chased him away. And I want to get my revenge, but the judge hasn't come back yet. And Lovett's like, quit your pissing. We have a great business. We've got money. How about we, like, run away together and open up a shop on the coastline, and you can kill people by the sea, and yes. I'll bake their corpses into food.
So kind of a fun thing, and I was debating on whether or not to say it now or say it later, but there's... So this story that was told over and over, three characters are there pretty much throughout the entire run of the Sweeney Todd story, as in, like, from 1846 on.
And that can I guess?
Yes.
Which, so how many did you say?
Three.
So Todd.
Mm-hmm.
The judge.
Nope.
What?
Todd, Lovett, and Toby.
Oh. Everybody else is optional.
Yes. Because, I mean, they didn't have this original backstory for Todd. Todd was originally just a serial killer whose right. business partner would cook them into pies, that's and then right. they had the unwitting
and then they gave
servant
him,
boy who...
And they gave him the humanizing factor, because they were like, we want our characters to have depth.
Yes, so...
Gotcha.
And so there was a lot of, like, some versions you would have Miss Lovett being just a business partner, some she was into him, some she was not 100% willing, and it's like... But, like, in the original, she, if I remember right, she is willing to cook people into pies, because, I mean, times are hard. You need meat.
Have you seen the price of meat lately?
We've got to use cats. Got to put those pussies into pies.
Got to put them pussies in the pies.
Anthony runs into Todd to tell him he knows where Joanna is being held, and the two hatch a plan to pass Anthony off as a wig maker, looking to buy some crazy people hair for his crazy people hair wigs. As Anthony rushes off to save Joanna and agrees to bring her back to Todd's shop, As Anthony rushes off to save Joanna and agrees to bring her back to Todd's shop while Anthony procures a ship to make their escape, Anthony is fleet of foot with pistol and passion in full swing. He leaves to rescue his beloved, and Todd appears to be setting up Anthony for a little bit of betrayal, because Todd starts to write a letter to Turpin being like, hey, a sailor is going to abduct your stolen ward. If you hope to see her again, come to my shop. Not sure if Todd is going to betray Anthony to get his revenge. I am kind of curious what you know of this, because I don't after watching it, I don't think that he was like going, haha, I'm going to use Anthony in order to get my revenge. But it definitely seems like he was stepping on Anthony's dick trying to get some revenge.
A little bit. Like, it was more of a, oh, this is a great way to get him to my shop. Get Turpin over here, and Anthony probably won't be here when Turpin shows up, and I can dispatch with Turpin.
Because knowing where Todd's thought process is at this point in the show, mm-hmm. I thought it was completely believable that he would...
Yeah.
I mean, he's killed so many people. Of course, why wouldn't he sacrifice Anthony if it mm-hmm. helped him further his goal?
Yeah.
That's kind of where my concern was for poor young salty mm-hmm. dog Anthony. Yeah.
Yeah, I can totally see that. Okay. I think.
But you don't think that's what it was at all. You think it was just like a happy convergence of coincidence? He was like, this will help.
Yeah, because he also probably knew that Turpin wouldn't get to Anthony. He'd get to him first, and or at least he hoped he would get to Todd's shop first. And
that makes sense. That makes sense. The boy, Toby, as I have learned that his name is, has a moment and has a song with Miss Lovett where he's like, "You're so great and wonderful and I love you and I would never let anything happen to you. I'd fight for you. I'd die for you. And that Mr. Todd man, I think he might be bad. Holy shit, you have Mr. Paula Spilowski's
Pirelli.
The fake Italian-Irishman's purse. You have his purse. I knew something was going on." And he loses his shit once he sees Lovett pull out Pirelli, pull out Pirelli's purse. And Toby is an interesting character in that at first he's there because Todd kills his boss and then tries to be like, "Oh, well, he slipped out the back and left. He said, stay here and he'll come back for you." And the boy's like, "Okay. I guess I live here now. I guess I work in the pie shop until the barber comes back." And you know, Lovett, she is a... God, this is... It's so weird to say that this character is good, aside from the cannibalism with pies, or this person's good, aside from indiscriminate killing, or this person's good, aside from being a complete fucking idiot. Anthony, in case you're Toby... Well, I'm going to focus on Toby a little more than I had planned on. I feel really bad for Toby.
As you should.
I think I feel worse for Toby than anyone else in this show.
He is probably him and the beggar woman are the two biggest victims in the show.
Yes. Yes, you are right.
They are the two biggest victims. Joanna... No clue what really happened. And I mean, she is up there, actually, with biggest victims.
Joanna definitely... Joanna's different thing is that for the majority of her life, she has lived in a gilded cage.
Yeah.
So she's lived in a very pampered, comforting life, but she was still a prisoner.
Yeah.
She was still a prisoner to the person who ruined her parents' lives.
And then as soon as she started looking like a woman... Judge Turpin got a boner for her, and there's three people who are the ultimate victims, but definitely Toby and the beggar woman have it the hardest, I think, because of what's going to happen to both of them.
I just feel bad for, like, Toby, because he's this crippled kid who was working with a con man first. And then he has this gig working at the pie shop, and he really likes working at the pie shop because Lovett is so nice to him.
Yeah.
And he's taken care of, he's got food, like, he's not beaten like he probably was with
Pirelli.
With Pirelli. You know, he's treated with some amount of respect. And so he develops this emotional attachment to Lovett, and he sees her as kind of this... I've noticed, like, the way he behaved to her, it was this weird combination of maternal love and potentially romantic love, in that, like, she was a mother figure because she was an older woman who was providing and being kind to him, but at the same time it was like he had protective feeling of, I won't let anything bad happen to you. Like, it was almost like that
I don't know if he had romantic, but definitely the maternal, like, the I'm not gonna let anyone hurt my mom. Don't say bad things about my mom. Don't take advantage of her.
Yeah, except I got a different tone from the way he behaved. Know what it reminded me a bit of, and you're not going to like this, is Homelander and his relationship with...
It
didn't go that far.
No.
But that's what it reminded me of.
No.
Like, there was this...
I purged that from my mind. That was gone from my mind. I had forgotten about all of that because I had just shut that part of my brain off.
Well, I brought it back.
God damn it.
I brought it back. Now let's talk about it. Just kidding. So. So Toby has his song with Miss Lovett, in which he's like, I love you. I won't let anything bad happen to you. Hey, Todd is bad. You should be careful of Todd. And Lovett, of course, loves Todd. So she's like, oh, no, you're fine. Don't worry.
And she's the one who hatched the let's put people into pies idea.
This is true. She is the one who hatched the...
that was her idea.
The cannibalism pot pies, yes. So after... Toby sees the purse, Pirelli's purse, and freaks out about it. Lovett is like, no, 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 you're mistaken. It was a gift from a pawn shop. You know how you've always wanted to help me make the pies, Toby? Well, let's go ahead and get started. You can help me start making pies now. And Lovett lures Toby into the bakehouse and locks him in to practice grinding meat. I thought for sure she was going to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And then she just kind of locks him in there. Until I assume she can talk to Todd to be like, hey, what do we do with him?
He knows too much.
Yeah, he knows too much. And as she's like coming out of the bakehouse, it turns out that Beetle has shown up. And Beetle Bastard shows up to talk to Lovett about complaints that they've received regarding the establishment's chimney and the foul odor oozing forth from it. Lovett is able to distract Beetle Bastard from investigating the bakehouse by dangling a free manscaping appointment with Mr. Todd and his little slicey friend. So she basically tells Beetle, like, oh, well, it's locked and I don't have the key. Mr. Todd has it and he's not here. So, you'll just have to come back later. Well, when will he be back? Oh, I don't know. He went somewhere. He'll be gone for hours. Mm-hmm. And as she's saying that, Todd fucking walks in the door.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, Mr. Todd, I was just telling Mr. Beetle how you were looking forward to giving him the best shave he's ever had with a facial massage, all free of charge. And, there's a great part where after Beetle is like excited about his free manscaping appointment, he goes through like the curtain to leave and Todd just turns to Lovett and gives this like devilishly wicked grin. Just he's like, hee hee, hee hee hee.
Yeah.
And I really like the subtle parts that the actors do.
Mm-hmm.
Cause they do a really good job of conveying a lot of, emotion and intent just with very few gestures, and I particularly like the subtle parts of this show.
Yeah,
because so much of it is in your face. And I will actually, my least favorite thing I will say about this show, I did not like the constant shrieking of the work horn.
It's even worse if you're listening to it on studio headphones.
I would imagine, because
at work
it just blasts in both sides of your ears and it meets in the middle and just reverberates there. Because I did not, every time they would do that horn, I know they did it to show scene changes, but they also did it at like every time that Todd would like slit someone's throat and hold up the razor, they would do it then for like dramatic effect, I would assume.
Yeah.
And every time they did it, it just felt like someone was taking a tiny little needle and poking me in the ear.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like it.
Oh, no, it's not great.
Okay. Anthony was successful in his deceit of Mr. Fogg, the proprietor of the insane asylum that Joanna is being kept at. And he is ushered in to find Joanna. A brief tumble ensues in which Anthony drops his pistol, because of course he fucking does, like a useless chode, and Joanna gets a bit of revenge herself and shoots Mr. Fogg. The two of them run to freedom and right into Todd's shop. Anthony tells Joanna to wait there and he takes off to procure their getaway vessel. Filthy hobo woman has her filthy hobo woman sense kick in, and she sniffs out Joanna, all the while screaming, Beetle! Beetle! Like why is she calling for Beetle?
Because he would be a member of law enforcement.
He's like a constable or something, but
yeah.
Doesn't she know he's a despicable fuck who won't help?
Oh yeah, but she's also not completely with it, so she's...
I guess that's fair. So she's screaming for Beetle while she's sniffing around the pie shop, and she finds her way up into Todd's barbershop, but is confronted by Todd, who proceeds to...
Well, and right before this happens, she gets over to where in the previous, or in the scene where we're finding out what happened to Joanna.
So in the very, like, the very beginning, when Todd walks, he goes back home. He goes to his old shop, and there's the pie shop, you know, on the underneath his barber shop, and he's talking to Lovett and asking, well, what happened to the people who used to live above you? And that's when she's recounting, oh, well, poor Benjamin Barker had a wife, had a daughter, and then all this shit happened.
Mm-hmm.
And in that scene, you see, you know, as they're recounting, you see a woman holding a baby, mm-hmm. like, in the background behind.
In this corner, where now a trunk sits, prior to that, there was a cradle. And she sees that area, and she mimes picking up the baby and holding it, and starts singing a little lullaby, and then when Todd comes in and confronts her, goes, wait, don't I know you? And then that's
when the judge shows up, and he's basically like, I don't have time for this, so he just slits her throat,
mm-hmm.
pushes her in the fancy chair, and sends her down the meat chute mm-hmm. into the bakehouse, and if you haven't caught on by now...
You will soon.
Yeah. Oh, God. So he... Because she's babbling. She's babbling and she won't leave his shop. She almost botches his assassination plans for the judge. After dumping the hobo woman's body, Todd tells Turpin that Joanna is safe and that the sailor did not harm her and that his abusive lesson has taught her well. She now wants his dinosaur dick. Excited at the news, Turpin decides that... close shave is in order.
Very close shave.
Yep, he plops his ancient arse in the chair, and Todd lathers him up and is getting ready to do the shave thing. Todd reveals his true identity and splits Turpin right as the man realizes who Todd really was. He's like, Benjamin Barr! And that's when he slits his throat.
Mm-hmm.
He dumps the body as normal, and he tries to leave. Stumbles across Joanna, who is pretending to be a man. Todd decides, well, I guess I need to murder you too, and he tries to, but Joanna gets away. Todd rushes down to the bakehouse and hears Lovett screaming. The judge was not quite dead yet and was grasping at her with his bony hands. Todd rushes down to help her, dispose of the bodies, and realizes the filthy hobo woman was Lucy, his wife.
Yep.
Who poisoned herself. And did not die. The resulting poisoning left her light in the head, as they put it. Much to Todd's dread.
Mm-hmm.
Lovett tries to be like, yeah, I didn't tell you about your wife, but I was trying to protect you. Also, I wanted that dick. You're not mad at me, right? To which Todd replies, haha, of course, Lovett, you silly goose. Of course I'm not mad. Now help me take a look at the oven real quick. Say, could you climb inside and check it? Great. I'm going to close the doors. We don't want to lose any coal or wood or whatever we're using for a fucking fuel source in this time period. So yeah, Todd throws Lovett in the oven and then proceeds to go and weep over Lucy's body. Toby, who is now crazy as all hell...
because he has seen not one, not two, but three bodies come down that chute.
Yeah, he is crazy as all fuck. He emerges out of the cellar or basement or whatever it is and is like, man, there are a lot of dead bodies. Hey, a razor. Kill Todd. Toby grabs the razor and slits Todd's throat as he's weeping over Lucy's corpse. Todd falls to the floor, dead... the ruby river of his life flowing away from him, and that's when the Popo, along with Anthony and Joanna, rush in. Toby, being his Toby self, is like, grind the meat three times through the grinder to make the meat juicy and tender. The end.
Yep.
Curtain call. Take a bow, everyone. Hope you can sleep at night.
That... I mean, they do end with the Ballad of Sweeney Todd again, yeah, and saying, like, so... this is the lesson of the show. People are rat bastards. The end.
Yeah, people are rat bastards, so just kill everyone indiscriminately. That's the message that I take away from this show. So that's what happens is after... because Toby, so he comes out of the basement, and he's just fucking cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Mm-hmm.
And
his hair is literally white shock.
And he's, yeah, he just, and he looks like a walking corpse. Like they did trauma makeup or whatever to make him like really
mm-hmm.
corpsey looking. But then, yeah, he just, maybe you can expand upon why he did what he did, because he's so out of it. He basically, like, sees the razor, and then he picks up the razor, and he's like, "Razor! Kill Todd!" And then he just kills Todd.
Well, so what it is he sees... He probably heard what happened to Lovett, comes out, sees the razor, sees Todd, and he does bend down and touches Lucy's neck and pulls away blood, and goes, "Oh, I was right. You're a demon. I'm gonna kill you now." Because that's sort of where his mind has gone, and while he's doing it, he's just, you know, patty cake, baker's man, bake me a cake. No, bake me a pie. And, oh man, that scene is fucking chilling.
It is definitely very creepy, and I do disagree that he heard what happened with Lovett, because I don't think he's in the right enough mind to mm-hmm. hear her get murdered and keep it together. I think he would have been, like, hysterical and weeping and wailing and maybe trying to open the doors to save her.
Shock does some amazing things to you.
Yeah, I mean, sure.
Or like, he maybe not that he knew for sure, but he could put two and two together enough to go, you probably killed Lovett.
Well, for all he knows...
I'm gonna go...
For all he knows, he doesn't know that Lovett was there, mm-hmm. and he's like, Lovett's gone... I will save her by killing the demon.
Maybe.
And that way it'll just be me and Lovett mm-hmm. forever and ever and ever.
Yeah, maybe.
It's just speculation at this point.
Yeah.
We don't know. We don't know, Kay.
That ending does fuck you up a bit, because...
And after... Because the Popo... Oh my god. It's so funny. Like, when you see stuff with cops in London before, like... Because just the way that they're holding their sticks, it's so much less intimidating than, like, a pistol.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a gun of any kind. He's just like, "I've got my stick! You stay away with that razor, or I'll give you a good sticking
mm-hmm.
with my stick!"
Yeah, and, like, I don't know, like, I know it's dark as hell, but I have a love-hate relationship with the ending, because you would love to see Sweeney Todd end up happy. But he went to he already crossed that event horizon, and once Lucy's gone, he would rather die, because...
Yeah, he...
Once he realizes what he did, he's just like, fuck it, because he doesn't fight when he gets his throat slit.
Oh,
he's
no,
just
he,
like, yeah,
he,
sure.
Yeah, he lets it happen. It also is quick, so, mm-hmm. I mean, but...
Mm-hmm.
Just the way... That fucking show ends. How it just
Toby just
you
just it got just, to grind the meat.
It just Toby goes back to grinding the meat. There's 1, 2, 3 dead corpses. 4 if you count what's in the oven.
Mm-hmm.
In the room, and then the cops come in with Anthony and Joanna.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Know what it kind of reminds me of a little bit?
Hmm.
It reminds me a little bit the end of Bat Boy. When the fucking
yes,
animal control guy
it is
shows
absolutely,
up.
That is, yeah, I think that's where Bat Boy's ending comes from a little bit, because...
Everybody's dead. What happened here?
Yeah, yeah.
And the only person to talk about what happened is Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs Toby.
Yep. And Toby doesn't even know for sure. He's just like,
no, he's,
gotta keep grinding the meat into the pies.
No, Toby has gone bye-bye. Toby,
yeah.
Toby is going to be...
City on fire, boy.
Toby is going to be going to Mr. Fogg's asylum.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he'll be living.
Yeah.
Because he's criminally insane now. Like, mm-hmm.
There's nothing to help him now, because he has seen hell.
Oh my god.
Because first he sees the beetle come down. So actually that's, let's see. That's... He's seen the beetle come down, then he's seen Judge Turpin.
I think they'd only processed the beetle by that point, though.
No, because the beetle comes down the chute, because Toby starts banging on the door, and he bangs 3 times after Todd kills the beetle.
Oh, gotcha,
he sends
gotcha,
the beetle
gotcha.
down, because that's their
code, and then mm-hmm. later on, Lovett is like, the beetle went down to the bake room and Toby's in there and he's screaming his head off.
Yes, and so Toby knows.
Gotcha.
That's why Toby's hair is just like white with fright and he's just like, I'm gone. I'm white? Checked out now.
White with fright. But yeah, I know I've been hard on this show, but it's a good show.
It's very good.
It's a good show. Music is really good. Sondheim, like you say, does good work.
This is my favorite of his, even though it's not a watch it all the time.
Sondheim is definitely a fan of tragedies.
Mm-hmm.
He likes a tragic story.
Yep.
Sondheim does not want you coming out of his show with a smile on your face.
And, oh man, just wait until we get to Into the Woods. That's one that he did after that, after Sweeney Todd. And it's one of, it's another popular one of his.
I remember when Into the Woods had its most recent major motion picture.
Yeah, fucking Johnny Depp again. Just stop.
So I remember when that happened, and I remember people talking about it. Mm-hmm. But of course, me being me, never saw it, know nothing about it, other than there's people, and they go into the woods. I assume.
I'm so okay, maybe we're doing that one in November.
The way that the way that musicals can work out, Into the Woods might actually be about discovering the lost city of Atlantis, for the fuck's sake that I know. Into the Woods, put on the scuba gear.
I mean, it's Sondheim, so it's going to be kind of what it says on the tin. I mean, you know, Sweeney Todd. It was about Sweeney Todd.
The Demon Barber of Fleet Street.
Yep. And I love the music in this show.
Yeah, I'm thinking I'm going to have to listen to it on listen to it on Spotify, right?
Yeah, they have the original cast. Is it the original Broadway cast?
So is that the one that we watched?
Or it's actually the one with Len Carew, and so it's the first recording.
Because I think I might have to listen to it come Monday.
It will have the Shriekies, so just be aware of that. But yeah, the Shriekies happen.
And the Shriekies are through the whole thing.
Yeah, they have the Shriekies and
remake. I'm telling you. Theater executives who I know are listening to our show, remake Sweeney Todd with no Shriekies, okay? Do something else.
I don't know. Maybe the Johnny Depp one doesn't have the Shriekies. I haven't seen anything except for the scene with him and Alan Rickman.
But it has Johnny Depp, who gives you the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, and it's a stupid reason why he gives me the heebie-jeebies, but he does.
Hey, it's a perfectly reasonable reason. Every reason is a reason that is reasonable to the person who reasons it.
This is true. And, I mean, maybe next year for Spoopy Month we'll cover that version and do like a, okay, we've had a year to recover.
What did you think, Warren?
What did you think of this version compared to this version? Or we could do it sooner. Maybe do it as a bonus episode, I don't know. Have people pay us in order for me to watch that one. I don't like Johnny Depp, but, yeah, so, other than it being really fucking depressing... It's a good show. Good music, at least.
It was fantastic. As a theater production, it was very well done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very angry about how well it was done. It had good acting. It had good singing. It had good choreography. It had humor.
Mm-hmm.
And it had heart tugs.
Mm-hmm.
And it had hope and inspiration and depths of despair undreamt of by most mankind.
Yep.
It had a lot of stuff going for it.
Yeah. Welcome to your first real Sondheim show.
Fuck you, Sondheim.
So, in order to do our next show, we're going to have to do a dance.
Do a little dance.
Well, see.
Make a little love.
I'm going to need you.
Down tonight. Sorry.
I'm going to need you to do a step to the right. Or what is it? A step to the left.
Step to the left.
Not step. Sorry. See, singing the song threw me off. So, going to need to do a jump to the left.
Jump to the left.
And then a step to the right.
Step to the right.
Throw your hands on your hips.
Throw my hands on my hips.
Pull your knees in tight.
Pull my knees in tight.
You have not heard this song before.
Are you surprised?
Let's do the time warp again.
God damn it. So I have only heard that song, and I think you and I watched a snippet from the movie
that song.
But no, of course, if I'd heard the tune, I mm-hmm. probably would have recognized it. But
it's just a jump to the left, yes. and then a step to the right.
Yeah.
Put your hands on your hips, and pull your knees in tight.
Sounds like the Chastity song. Pull your knees in tight.
That's totally not the show. So, yeah, we're gonna do our own midnight showing, except not at midnight, of Rocky Horror Picture Show. The movie version, not the stage version.
Remind me, we were talking about him earlier. The guy in...
Yes.
What's his name again?
Tim Curry.
Tim Curry, thank you.
As we say, you know your type of person from your first Tim Curry movie. Some people, it's Rocky Horror. Some people, it's Clue. Some people, it's Fern Gully. Some people, it's It, which is where that horrible laughing clown noise came from.
You know, my first one might actually be Fern Gully.
Yeah.
Which has one of the coolest villains of all time.
Which is voiced by
Tim Curry.
Yeah. I want to say that my first Tim Curry, it's torn between Fern Gully and Clue, because I was into both around that time.
Well, Clue's a great movie.
It is. Because I was reading the Clue books, which those were a thing, and they were amazing, because they were mystery books. And, yeah. So, but yes, we're not doing Clue, the musical.
Is there a Clue musical?
Oh, hell yeah.
I demand that we do that at some point.
Oh, yeah, we will once I can find it.
Oh, fair point.
But this one we could find because your mom has it on on their Raspberry Pi, so we can borrow it and watch it.
Groovy.
Which, yeah. I don't know. It's been... So it's...
I know that you have negative emotions attached with this show because of an ex.
Well, and also, I had seen it once at home, and I was like, okay, I guess. And then I saw it at a midnight showing and realized that I am a fucking introvert, and being around that many goddamn people is nightmare fuel to me.
See, and the only thing
and
that
many people doing shouting at the screen and stuff, I'm like, oh god.
If you put a gun to my head and you said, write down a list of everything you know about Rocky Horror Picture Show, you know, what would it be? Okay, Tim Curry, people in lingerie for some fucking reason, time warp, bang. So that's all. That's all I know.
Also the lips at the beginning singing science fiction double feature.
I don't know if I've seen the very beginning. I will.
You will soon, and you'll recognize the song because I parodied it.
I do know that you parodied it.
Yes.
Parodied it. Words are hard.
They are hard. But yeah, so we'll do, because we missed last week, then it'll be a double feature this week, and it'll be a double horror double feature. Musical horror double feature.
We're going to double team those horror features? Or are we getting double teamed by the horror features?
I don't know. Your emotions got kind of fucked over by Sweeney Todd. And
it's because I'm a spongy bastard.
It's okay. I mean, my emotions also get messed up with it. I'm just numb to this show now.
I'm a delicate, sensitive sponge who is spongy in nature. And feel sad for fictional people who don't exist.
Hey, I feel sad for fictional people that don't exist, too. That's okay. I mean, we don't know for sure if Sweeney Todd didn't exist, you know. He could have been real. He could be right behind you.
The demon barber of Fleet Street.
I'll have to...
Would you eat a pie made from my flesh, Kay?
No. No. I wouldn't.
How would you know it was made from my flesh unless you participated in my murder?
That's a fair point, actually, but if I wouldn't knowingly eat a pie made out of you.
You know, I honestly wish that I could say I've never eaten human flesh.
You have eaten human flesh.
I have eaten human flesh.
Yes, you have.
Yep.
That was...
We're just going to leave that hanging in the air for our listeners to speculate. Where has Warren eaten human flesh?
Yeah.
Was it with a tribe down in New Guinea? Was it on his escapades around the world when he crash-landed in Antarctica and had to eat his co-pilot? Or was it perhaps on a date night with Kay when she made macaroni and cheese and grated off a chunk of her thumb?
You'll never know.
Never know. Out of those three scenarios, which one is the most likely?
So, Warren has, though, tasted human flesh.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was like eating a piece of an eraser off a pencil.
So thank you guys so much for listening to our show. We are so glad that you follow us every week. Sorry that we missed last week.
Things have been hectic, and Kay and I are a little out of it, so...
Yeah, needed to take a mental health week.
So sorry that we lapsed behind, but...
Yeah, but we're back. We're stronger than ever. We've now gone through the ringer, or rather the grinder of emotions 3 times.
That's how you get it juicy and tender.
Yes. Jesus Christ. So... just thank you guys for listening. We're going to try and get out a bonus episode for our patrons soon. Because we still have the Oil of Olay musical. If you want to listen to our Capitalism Gone Wild episodes, as well as our bonus episode on the Tony Awards and our bonus episode on Paint Your Wagon, then you can... join our Patreon, the $5 and up tier, at ToneDeafMusical at Patreon.com. Patreon.com/ToneDeafMusical. Wow. I'm also a little bit out of it with the words, so...
Also, if you want to visit a all-in-one hub for all of your tone-deaf needs, you can go to our website, which was lovingly crafted by Kay,
yes,
which is tonedeafmusical.com.
And I need to fix something with it, because it didn't auto-update for me. So
bastards.
I will be auto-updating, or not auto-updating, I will be manual-updating.
But Kay has episodes on our website, as well as links to our Twitter, Facebook, Gmail, and Patreon. So
yep.
If you just want to remember tonedeafmusical.com, that's our all-in-one site for all of our sources.
Yep, and eventually we'll have merch up on there. I just put test merch up there, so don't try to buy anything. We will have merch up there soon. We're also going to... we have a link to the Podcast Junkie Discord server on there, which you should join.
Come join the Podcast Junkie Discord server. It is an awesome place full of awesome people, and it's been a lot of fun.
It's great.
We've got our own channel on there if you want to come and say hi and talk about random stuff or even musical-related things.
Yes.
You know, because it is a musical podcast.
Yeah.
But
sometimes, you know, we'll sort of leak out what shows we're doing next a little early on there, because I sometimes will be like, oh my god, I can't wait to do this show.
And so, also pictures of our dog.
Yes, and pictures of Latte, who you heard at the beginning of the act 2 of our show, eating a cookie, because she's a good girl and she ate her dinner, so she got cookies.
Yep.
So
them's the rules.
Yep, them's the rules. And when you have a kid, you gotta make sure that you follow those rules.
If you want your food, you got to eat your food. Eat your food before you have your other food.
Yep.
That's good parenting advice.
That's right, very good parenting advice. So,
if you can ensure that your child is putting food in their mouth, then you are 90% of the way to ensuring they don't die.
Yep. Also got to make sure that water goes in there sometimes and that they sleep.
Just leave the toilet lit up. That's a replenishing source of water.
So, follow us every week here on Tone Deaf for great musical theater reviews, but not so great human child parenting advice.
That is very fair and accurately put, Kay. Good job.
Yes. So, that'll be it for this week. Join us next week for Rocky Horror Picture Show, where Warren loses his Rocky Horror virginity. That's a thing, by the way, is being a Rocky Horror virgin.
Will it be a rocking good time or a horrible experience?
you will be the judge of that. So that'll be it for this week. I'm Kay.
I'm Warren.
And this has been Tone Deaf.